Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. In states that allow medical marijuana, shops have sprung up to dispense it to patients. Many of them have been the target of raids by the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency and local police. But this week, the Justice Department directed federal prosecutors not to pursue cases involving medical marijuana. They were told to focus on major traffickers instead. Joining me in the studio to talk about implications of new guidelines on medical marijuana, Tom Riley, formerly of the Office of National Drug Control Policy under President Bush, and Carrie Johnson. She is Justice Department reporter for The Washington Post. Joining us from a studio at NPR in New York, Ethan Nadelman of the Drug Policy Alliance. I do look forward to hearing your conversation this morning. Your contributions to the program are always very important. Call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning to you, Tom. Good to have you here.
Hey, Diane.
And Carrie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Nathan, I'm glad you're with us.
Thanks, Diane. Actually, it's Ethan.
Ethan, forgive me. I'm sorry about that. All right, let's start with you, Carrie. Talk to us about this Justice Department memo.
Well, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, issued a statement indicating that there would be a policy change at the Justice Department and the agencies, component agencies that enforce drug laws, specifically in a 3-page memo sent to U.S. attorneys in about 14 states where there are some provisions for legalization or some provisions for medical marijuana. Prosecutors have been directed that they should not focus their attention on run-of-the-mill medical marijuana dispensaries or the patients who use them. In other words, they should focus more often on high-level drug trafficking, money laundering, or people who are using medical marijuana provisions as a cover for more violent or disruptive illegal activity.
How big a shift is this from that policy during the Bush administration?
Well, some advocacy groups have indicated that during the Bush administration in California alone, there were more than 200 raids on medical marijuana dispensaries. And if the DEA, the ATF, and local law enforcement actually pay attention to the Justice Department directive, that number will decline. Justice Department officials are portraying this as a broad policy shift and one that they had signaled in press conferences earlier in the year. But this memo to prosecutors is the fullest and most deep signal yet that they intend to focus on the most efficient use of their resources.
Carrie Johnson, she's Justice Department reporter for The Washington Post. Tom Riley, what's your reaction to this move?
Diane, I'm worried that this memo is going to make an already confused situation for medical marijuana in California even more chaotic. There are two things. The first part was in Attorney General Holder's announcement of the new policy. He emphasized, as Carrie mentioned, that they're not going to prosecute individual patients, and they're going to shift the focus to trafficking organizations. That's not a change at all. It's never been the priority of the federal government to prosecute low-level medical marijuana patients. In fact, all the federal involvement has been focused on drug cultivators, people who are selling and distributing. The federal government has always had limited resources in terms of who you choose to pick for prosecutions, and it's not really in anybody's interest. I know you've had many U.S. attorneys on your show in the past. It's not in any of their interest to go bust some poor, suffering person with a couple joints in their pocket. So that's not what they've been doing in the past. So in that sense, it's not really a change. On the second level, if you read the actual memo, they explicitly state that they are not changing the federal law, that they are not changing even an understanding of the federal law, and that even people in any of these states who comply to the letter with state laws are still subject to federal prosecution and still can, at the discretion of federal prosecutors, be picked up at any time. So it's a real, as I said, problem of creating confusion, because I think that it's going to send a green light to a lot of people out in California and other states that the federal government is now saying medical marijuana is okay, but it hasn't actually provided any protection for people who are cultivating it. And I think you're going to have more confusion from this.
Tom Riley, he's former associate director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. He served during the 8 years of the Bush administration. Ethan Nadelman, what's your reaction? Do you see this as creating confusion, or do you see it as clarification?
Well, I think it's going to open the door, Diane, for better and more responsible regulation of medical marijuana. On the one hand, Tom is right that, you know, under the U.S. Constitution, federal law is supreme. That means that the feds can, in theory, go in and bust anybody, even a patient, if they wanted to. What this memo does, as Carrie indicated, is to sort of put down in writing what Attorney General Holder said earlier this year, which is that if doctors and dispensaries and others are operating within state law, that the feds are not going to get involved. And I think the real message is here, it's basically the Obama administration saying to the states, you figure this out, right? That under the Clinton and Bush administrations, the feds played a very sort of antagonistic role, basically telling the states that whatever they did to try to regulate medical marijuana was going to be suspect under federal law. And if they went too far in trying to get their hands involved in regulating medical marijuana, that maybe even state authorities would themselves be susceptible to being targeted by federal authorities. What they're doing now is they're saying, state governments, you're already gaining experience in regulating this stuff. It's not just that in almost all of the 13 states where marijuana is now legal for medical purposes, that you have states and counties issuing patient ID cards for patients with a recommendation from a doctor. It's also that you now have states like New Mexico and Rhode Island in which state law explicitly authorizes state governments to get involved in licensing and regulating the production of marijuana for medical purposes.
Ethan Nadelman.
So I think that's the real future of this.
Ethan Nadelman, he's executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also reach us through Facebook and Twitter. Carrie Johnson, how is this going to affect those states that do not permit the use of medical marijuana?
Diane, I suspect that there will be very little change in those majority of states. The battleground now is not only in California, which has witnessed over the last several years a proliferation of medical marijuana dispensaries, as much as 800 or maybe even 1,000 of them, and also a big clash between state district attorneys in the San Diego and Los Angeles areas and federal law enforcement and these activists in favor of medical marijuana, as well as in a few states that are trying to figure out a dispensary system that makes more sense than California's, in particular Rhode Island, Michigan, and New Mexico, where there are some provisions on the books for medical marijuana use. But these states are trying to figure out a system in which the product can be provided to people who are suffering from ailments such as HIV, AIDS, cancer, and other problems.
And tell me, is there always a prescription required from a physician in order to qualify for use of medical marijuana?
Well, this is one of the points that's being contested out in California in particular. There are prescriptions being written, but they're being written for a host of other ailments aside from cancer
such
and
as
HIV. anxiety disorder.
I see.
And our paper the other day ran a photo of a gentleman smoking a bong who said he was prescribed marijuana for an anxiety disorder. Some physicians, including the American Medical Association, do not support the use of marijuana, especially smoke marijuana, for medical purposes. This has been a policy on the books of the AMA since 2001. They're firmly opposed to this. And I heard from physicians in this area, a doctor from Maryland emailed me last night saying he had never heard of medicine being prescribed in smoking form. In other words, there are alternatives to providing THC.
Such as pills, for example.
Exactly.
Now, are there, Ethan Nadelman, are there any marijuana dispensaries that do provide pills instead of the smoked form of marijuana?
Diana, the dispensaries provide marijuana in a variety of forms. I mean, there is a pill called Marinol, which is available by prescription by doctors. It has the key ingredient of marijuana, which is THC, in it. And, you know, it works for some people. It can reduce nausea and other symptoms. But a very significant number of patients say that the pill does not work as well as smoking marijuana or taking in the form of an edible product or a tea or what have you. They'll say that if we're nauseous, getting a pill down is very difficult. They'll say that when you swallow a pill, it can take half an hour, hour and a half to come on, whereas when you smoke a joint, you're basically titrating your dose. The pill can, in fact, make you high. It can make you higher than smoking the marijuana, so it can be more disorienting. So on the one hand, smoking your medicine may be a very unconventional way to take your medicine, but when there are hundreds of thousands of people who are saying this is the most effective way, the government should not be calling them criminals for taking their medicine in that fashion.
Ethan Nadelman, he's executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. He's on the line with us from the NPR studio in New York. And joining us now by phone is Gil Kerlikowske. He's director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, of course, otherwise known as the Drug Czar. Good morning to you, sir. It's good to have you with us.
Good morning, Diane. It's nice to be with you.
I know that you were formerly police chief in Seattle and did not particularly agree with the idea when Seattle passed a pro-medical marijuana law. Now, in your new position, how do you feel about the Department of Justice issuing this three-page memo allowing those states where medical marijuana is legal to proceed, sort of ignoring those places in the country that do dispense medical marijuana?
I think that the guidelines that the Attorney General issued were very much needed. Federal law enforcement, federal prosecutors trying to deal with 13 different state laws makes it difficult to figure out where their resources should go. So this does not legalize marijuana. It doesn't give a pass to anyone. But it clearly says that with limited law enforcement resources, these are the traffickers, the dispensaries that are operating outside the law. Those things, that's where enforcement should be.
How will the guidelines to prosecutors affect the overall war on drugs?
Well, I ended the war on drugs the first week that I was in office, and right after confirmation in May. But I think what we're really hoping for is a much more balanced strategy to look at the drug problem in the United States. It isn't just a criminal justice problem, but I think the guidelines are particularly helpful, and I don't think that the fact that people who had a doctor's recommendation for marijuana were the subject of federal law enforcement, and this just adds clarity to an existing practice.
Now, you may have heard Carrie Johnson at the Washington Post say that these prescriptions being issued are not necessarily only for cancer or HIV treatment of pain and nausea, but also being issued now for statements like anxiety. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I think our answer is that we would like medical science to decide on the efficacy of marijuana or some of the components of marijuana. And these really aren't prescriptions that doctors are writing. They're called recommendations. And, of course, there are these 13 states that have passed some level of use of marijuana based upon a doctor's recommendation. But science should answer the question.
Now, let me ask you something that's on the minds of a lot of people. Are you concerned that these new guidelines may indeed help the illegal drug traffic trade?
Actually, anything but. These guidelines really target the people that are not operating within any legal framework. They're very consistent when it comes to saying that a core priority for prosecution of federal resources would be the people involved in these dispensaries that involve violence, firearms, sale to minors, their financial and marketing, et cetera, and ties to other criminal enterprises. If anything, I would be concerned if I was running a dispensary and I didn't have every I dotted and every T crossed in compliance with a state law.
So finally, looking back on your time as the city's chief law enforcement officer in Seattle, as police chief there, even though you didn't agree, you went ahead, you went forward and honored the law as it was passed. How do you feel about it now? Do you still feel what you're doing is honoring the Justice Department's memo against your own best thinking?
Well, I think that the law that was passed about medical marijuana, actually in Washington State, was passed almost a year or even longer before I became police chief. So that was already in effect. But I can tell you that Los Angeles is a very different spot than the state of Washington or Seattle. And Los Angeles has had a great deal of difficulty regulating and enforcing, but I understand they are taking this on now with full force for those that are not operating in compliance. I could tell you that in Seattle, it wasn't quite the issue that it has been in Los Angeles. And so, you know, states are passing these laws. They've really got to decide how best to use all of the resources they have.
So your thinking is that though these laws may be humane and in the best interests of those who need them, there still need to be careful watch and regulation.
I would say you summed that up very correctly, Diane. These are evolving, and these are issues that need to be very carefully thought out. Science needs to weigh in on this as well as public policy, and not just the spin that has been put on the, on these guidelines that the Attorney General issued, and the spin has not been particularly accurate.
So you were saying you don't think they've gone far enough.
No, I would say that the articles and the spin that's been put on it is that it is giving a free pass on medical marijuana or loosening guidelines. And I would tell you that these are very strict guidelines, and they're very helpful to law enforcement because they really help to define how the law enforcement resources are used.
Gil Kerlikowske, he's director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, otherwise known as the Drug Czar. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Indeed. Carrie Johnson, you heard what Mr. Kerlikowske had to say about the spin that has somehow been put on this decision by the Justice Department. How do you interpret what you have been informed of and how you have translated it for consumer consumption?
Well, you know, the one thing I've learned about this issue, which is newer to me than some others on the DOJ beat, is that people are extremely passionate on both sides, and they hear what they want to hear. So whereas some activists and advocates who are not just, you know, liberals or progressives. There are some conservatives who believe strongly in medical marijuana. Libertarians, the Cato Institute issued and the Libertarian Party yesterday issued a very strong support for this DOJ policy. They are viewing this and citing Gallup polls and some other evidence of changes in social thinking on marijuana use generally. And they view this as opening the door to additional public conversation about the legalization of marijuana. The Justice Department doesn't view it that way, and particularly the DEA and the ATF, the federal agencies that are conducting these joint raids with local law enforcement out of California, don't view it that way. And it's been fascinating that since the Attorney General announced this policy at press conferences earlier in the year, the DEA has continued to conduct raids in partnership with local law enforcement in California. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this message plays out now that these guidelines are in order.
Tom Riley, do you agree that people hear what they want to hear, even the police departments in those cities where marijuana use for medical purposes is legal?
This is exactly what I was worried about and was talking about before
the
in
confusion.
Terms of confusion. And I think that Director Kerlikowske touched on it when he talked about the idea of the quote-unquote spin on the story. I think that was the most predictable spin anybody could have ever anticipated, that when you hold a press conference saying that we have a massive change in our policy on this, but when you look through it, it's actually not a change in terms of a lot of the specifics. And even more specifically, it's Director Kerlikowske said that this gives clarity. It doesn't, because what it does is it says you prosecutors should defer to state guidelines unless it meets any number of different criteria, which are in your discretion to decide. So it actually makes it more confusing, and every single state can come up with, right now there are 13 or 14 states, there could be 30 states that could have completely different guidelines. Some of them could have guidelines that are wacky, who knows, and you're supposed to defer to them when you choose to or when it's in the federal interest or not in the federal interest.
That's
totally confusing.
Ethan Nadelman, it sounds as though what's needed are federal guidelines to instruct states rather than simply to allow a change in policy for a few states.
Well, I think that could be one option, Diane. I mean, in full disclosure, I and my colleagues at the Drug Policy Alliance were responsible for writing and passing or getting past the majority of the medical marijuana laws that are now in place. We did not draft the California law, which is by far the most wide open. So in most other states, the state legislation has medical boards that review which conditions are appropriate for marijuana to be used for. In California, it's very wide open. And I should also say that, you know, when we laugh at the notion of people using marijuana for something like anxiety or insomnia, the bottom line is people are being prescribed drugs, oftentimes drugs that are more dangerous and more risky than marijuana for conditions like anxiety or insomnia. So I think part of this, yes, federal guidelines would help. But let's not forget that the federal government process in this area has been deeply politicized. 20 years ago, the DEA's own administrative law judge recommended that marijuana be rescheduled to Schedule II to allow doctors to prescribe it legally, and that was shot down on political grounds. So I think what you see here is the Obama administration and the Justice Department effectively saying, we don't see much hope in the future for moving this forward at the federal level. You states, you figure it out. You come up with regulations, and we're going to step back a bit if you do this.
Carrie, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's the case. In a briefing the other day, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs was asked the question of whether the Obama administration was encouraging states to adopt their own medical marijuana laws. And Gibbs said very firmly, no.
Carrie Johnson, she's a reporter for The Washington Post, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And we'll open the phones now. We have many callers who'd like to be part of the conversation. Let's go first to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Jack. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. It's nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I would like to express my feelings on the hypocrisy of the way marijuana has been criminalized. I've never smoked marijuana. I don't even smoke cigarettes. But I live across the river here from Ohio, from Kentucky. And marijuana is currently the number one cash crop in the state of Kentucky. The Department of Agriculture is paying farmers in Kentucky to not grow tobacco, and they're using their acreage to grow marijuana. Periodically, we have 18-wheelers drive by on our interstates, and they're stopped, and they find tons of marijuana being transported across the country. I would think that alcohol would have proved to us that prohibition just doesn't work.
Jack, thanks for your call. Tom Riley.
I would say two things. The first is that the caller is right about Kentucky does have a very large problem with outdoor grows. But let's go back to California for a second. I think that the situation there on medical marijuana is a true Wild West. I mean, you've got, Carrie mentioned, up to 1,000 dispensaries in the state. Now, there's 1,000 in L.A. County alone. This is there are storefronts, there are grow operations, indoor and outdoor, millions and millions, hundreds of millions, maybe even billions of dollars worth of marijuana going business going on right now, and a lot of it is operating in this gray area that we're called that you slap the word medical on it and it's okay. That's where we're really running into trouble right now, and that's the subject we're talking about today. But the real problem is that this market. I think has been getting a green light from the messages that came out earlier this week that this is now okay in terms it's been okayed by the federal government. This is a thriving industry that is not going to be shrunk by this message.
I'm looking at today's New York Times editorial entitled "Good Sense on Medical Marijuana." First sentence reads: "The federal government should not be harassing sick people and their caregivers." It goes on to say Attorney General Eric Holder has made the right decision calling off prosecutions of patients who use marijuana for medical purposes or those who distribute them, provided they comply with state laws. And yet, Carrie, you say these raids are continuing, even in California, where the use of medical marijuana is legal.
Yeah, the hot spot is how much cooperation the federal government in the form of law enforcement agencies like the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and particularly the Drug Enforcement Administration, are going to undertake moving forward with local police in California who could use their help.
Well, how much cooperation is there then between the Justice Department when it issues such a memorandum and those local police departments?
Well, the cooperation usually happens at the local level with agencies, federal agencies and personnel based in, you know, Southern California, for instance. And some of these guidelines have been unpopular with line-level DEA agents in the California area.
But they are under the aegis of the Department of Justice, presumably.
Indeed, they are.
But they act on their own, is what you're saying.
Well, you know, when you have a law enforcement agency that for many, many years now has had the focus of combating illicit drug use, and marijuana remains under Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act, meaning that it's among the most tightly controlled substances there is, it's hard for DEA agents to get that.
Carrie Johnson, she's Justice Department reporter for The Washington Post. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls on the subject of the use of medical marijuana.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Island Press and the Tides Foundation. Island Press provides solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. By the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe on the web at germany.info. And by the Pew Charitable Trusts, whose Subsidy Scope project provides information about federal subsidies across industries at pewtrusts.org. This is NPR.
Urban agriculture. A city designer explains how growing food in urban public spaces can help feed the hungry, supplement the existing agribusiness model, and promote good health for all. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And if you've just joined us, we're talking about the memo recently released by Eric Holder at the Department of Justice, a three-page memo which allows states where the use of medical marijuana has been approved, allows state and local officials to ignore the use of medical marijuana. Do I have that right, Carrie Johnson?
Well, it more tells federal prosecutors in those 13 or 14 states that they don't need to expend their scarce resources to prosecute any cases involving patients or dispensaries that are following state law.
All right, let's go to Oklahoma City. Good morning, Fred. You're on the air.
Thanks for letting me call in. I enjoy your show every day.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got COPD, emphysema, chronic, and there's some nights where I can't sleep. There's a lot of pain and anxiety in spite of my regular medicine. If I take like one or two hits of some quality marijuana, then everything seems to go away and I can sleep. Trouble is, in Oklahoma, that's really expensive. You know, friends give it to me, and, you know, sooner or later there needs to be, we need to learn from history and the lessons of the prior prohibitions on alcohol. And I'll take y'all's comments off the air.
All right, sir. Thanks for calling. Ethan Nadelman, do you see an analogy with alcohol here and prohibition?
Well, I mean, very much so. And in some respects, what Tom Riley described before is like the situation in the United States in the early 1930s with alcohol prohibition. More and more states were repealing their own alcohol prohibition laws. The federal government was not yet ready to do so. The 21st Amendment had not yet passed. So there was a bit of a free-for-all going on. And the inevitable result of that, of course, was the repeal of national alcohol prohibition. Now, Carrie mentioned before, there's a recent Gallup poll that came out a couple of days ago, which is really quite remarkable. What it shows is that support among Americans for making marijuana legal, not just for medicine, but more broadly, like alcohol, has jumped from roughly 23% in the mid-1980s to 44% today. It's 54% among Democrats. It's almost 50% among independents. It's over 50% in the Western states. So what we do see is that this medical marijuana issue continues to play out. We know that 70 to 80% of all Americans believe that marijuana should be legal for medical purposes right now, and that probably if you could have a vote in all of the 50 states, medical marijuana would be legalized in virtually every single one of them tomorrow if that was possible. But inevitably, as Fred said, the best way to protect both patients and, quite frankly, everybody else is to make marijuana legal, to tax it, control it, and regulate it. 800,000 Americans getting arrested each year, that's a horrible waste and a tragedy.
Tom
Tens
Riley.
Of billions of dollars being spent each year, also a waste.
Tom Riley.
Well, Ethan points to the Gallup poll. One other poll data that I think is very interesting and I think he's also familiar with is there have been a number of states in the past that have had ballot initiatives about flat-out legalizing marijuana. And one of the interesting phenomena is when these ballot initiatives are introduced, they typically start out with fairly high approval rating, and they are ahead in the polls. Each time, though, that it's happened, and Nevada is, I think, the most dramatic example, as it's debated more in the public, as public health officials, law enforcement officials, addiction officials, education officials, business, employers, and others come forward and start thinking about and talking about the implications of marijuana legalization, support for it goes down. I'm sure that, you know, we have a changing mores in this country in a lot of ways, and I saw that Gallup poll about the marijuana approval too. But I suspect that once it was debated more thoroughly, and this is not a partisan issue, this is true for Republicans, Democrats, everybody, the more that it's debated and talked about, the more people think that having more marijuana would have more problems.
All right. I do not want to get sidetracked on the issue of legalization of marijuana. Rather, I want to come back to its medicinal uses. Here's an email from John in Naples, Florida. He says, my wife has cancer and does not have access to marijuana in Florida. I applaud the decision and wish more states would acknowledge the medical use of marijuana. The statement that science has not weighed in on the other uses is valid. However, the feds have banned all research on medical use of marijuana. If they would examine the benefits, they would discover even more medical benefits. Is that true, Carrie Johnson?
I'm not as familiar with the studies that are being conducted now, but I do know the American Medical Association has called for additional research on these questions while continuing its policy statement that it generally opposes marijuana for medicinal purposes.
Ethan Nadelman.
Yeah, Diane, what your listeners should do is go to the website of the National Library of Medicine, which is run by the National Institute of Health of the U.S. government, and enter the search term therapeutic cannabis. And when you go there, you will see literally thousands of studies regarding the medicinal value of marijuana. I mean, there's now a well-funded effort at the University of California at San Diego to look at the medical value of marijuana. It's paid for by the state government because the federal government has been reluctant to put much money into this. There's an International Association of Cannabis Medicine with very distinguished researchers from around the world. So there's a lot of fascinating evidence about the medical value of marijuana consumed in a variety of forms, from the pill in pharmaceutical forms, to inhalants, to smoked form, what have you.
All right, to Portland, Maine. Good morning, Seamus. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am actually an advocate for Question 5 in Portland, all across the state of Maine, and I've been listening to your show, and I love listening to the people that think they know what they're talking about when they're speaking for patients. And I'm a stage 4 Burkitt's lymphoma survivor, and I have been abiding by state law. I've been growing my three plants in flower, three plants in vegetative for the last 6 years. I have never broken state law. Neither has law enforcement ever bothered me about it. I'm very open about it. I'm constantly holding signs. I'm trying to get people out to the polls, collecting petition signatures. And people need to realize that people that use it really do need it. Speaking from the cancer standpoint, I cannot hold food down or gain an appetite without using it. And you can use tinctures, you can use truffles, thin mints, and you don't have to smoke it. That's a common misconception. The biggest thing is I hear people talking about the legal form, like Marinol and Mercade. Those cost $33 per pill, if not more. Those legal drug dealers like Pfizer and those people are making trillions every year. And if you look at the quarterly lobby reports, it's amazing how much these people are actually lobbying or bribing people to keep it illegal so they can continue to make $2,700 a month off of each patient.
So, Seamus, let me understand. Do the three plants that you grow privately, please turn your radio down.
Yes, ma'am. Radio's off.
Okay. Do the three plants that you grow provide you with the medicinal marijuana that you need?
Yes.
Okay. Tom Riley, this is a question that I think many people out there would have. Why would you want to deprive someone like Seamus in Portland, Maine, who is totally following the law, totally treating his own illness, not trying to make money off it? Why would you want to deprive him?
Diane, I think that's very well stated, and that's a question that a lot of people have, but I think it's the actual opposite of the question that's being posed by medical marijuana. We have an approval process in this country for drugs. We have drugs that are much more dangerous and addictive than marijuana.
True.
That are available at the CVS down the street.
True.
And a huge abuse problems with those.
True.
Too. So it's not that our country has a fear of marijuana per se or of dangerous drugs per se. What's happening here, and this is the part that I don't think people understand, is that the medical marijuana activists are asking for not approval of marijuana. They're asking for marijuana to be the one and only drug that is exempt from the approval process. Every other drug that we have, powerful, weak, dangerous, side effects or not, goes through the FDA approval process. This is the one drug that we're being asked to exempt from that process and to approve by the ballot initiative or at the ballot box instead of through science and medicine.
Tom Riley, he's former associate director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy during the 8 years of the Bush administration. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Ethan, how do you respond to Tom Riley's point that this has not been approved and therefore should not be out there for people to use?
Well, I think, first of all, it goes back to the point I made before, Diane, which is how profoundly politicized marijuana policy has been in the United States at the federal level, especially for much of the last century. I mean, if we look at the origins of marijuana prohibition, it was profoundly grounded in prejudice against Mexican Americans, Mexican migrants. The first state laws in Utah and Texas and elsewhere were all about racism. And the Federal Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, which criminalized marijuana at the federal level, if you look at the transcripts of the congressional testimony, it reads like a Monty Python routine. There was no scientific basis for that. As I said, 20 years ago, the DEA's own administrative law judge ruled that marijuana should be reduced to Schedule II, allowing doctors to prescribe marijuana as a medicine, but he was overruled on political grounds. The FDA has been a profoundly politicized process. So yes, it would be good for marijuana to be available in a variety of forms with federal approval, but given the politicization of marijuana at the federal level, I think allowing states and patients to take this into their own hands has been the only effective alternative.
Kerry Johnson, turning to you, do you believe that as a result of the Attorney General's action, you're going to see more states allowing the use of medical marijuana?
I don't think we know enough yet. I was very interested in talking to people on both sides of this issue, and there are two very distinct sides all week long. And to the extent that the federal government is now leaving this to the states, I think it's going to be a state-by-state analysis, although I am somewhat persuaded by analysts who are telling me it may provide the way to better dispensary systems in states that don't currently have them, like Rhode Island and New Mexico, which are considering them now.
You do have for-profit and not-for-profit dispensaries. Tell me the difference. Who's making the money?
Well, one of the issues cited often by the district attorney in San Diego and in Los Angeles, where some of these issues are most on the front lines, is that the dispensaries, in their view, are supposed to be not-for-profit. They're supposed to follow articles of incorporation, go through regular business and accounting audits and the like, and that many of these dispensaries, 800, 1,000, maybe more of them, are operating in a more fly-by-night fashion and for-profit. And those are the dispensaries against which some of the state and federal law enforcement agents in California have been cracking down.
Now, Ethan, how do you see that with some for-profit, others not for profit? Doesn't that sort of complicate the issue, seeing that some people are making an awful lot of money off other people's miseries?
Well, I would lean in favor of not-for-profit, but let's face it, the pharmaceutical companies are making tens of billions of dollars a year marketing all sorts of medicines, some of which are dramatically more dangerous than marijuana, although obviously offering benefits to people. But Diane, if I could just make these two points here, because I'm deeply involved in the effort to make marijuana legal for medical purposes in many other states. What I can tell you, in New York, in New Jersey, in Illinois, New Hampshire, many other states where marijuana is on the verge of being legalized for medical purposes, state legislators, their principal concern has been, what about federal law? What about federal agents? And I think the guidelines that came out yesterday or on Monday send a very clear signal that the state should move forward in trying to regulate this stuff as effectively as possible.
All right.
And Diane, if I could just say, with respect to California, there's a big difference between Northern and Southern California. Mm. In Northern California, the localities, San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, others, they have now set up responsible systems to license and regulate the medical marijuana dispensaries. In Los Angeles, the city council has sat on its hands for 2 years, failing to implement any sorts of regulations. And I think the reason you see a sort of Wild West situation in Los Angeles right now is because of the failure of local government area to regulate effectively.
All right. Let's go finally to Westminster, Maryland. Good morning, Andy. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I would just like to comment and say that as a student and voter for Obama, I am enthused that we finally have an administration that recognizes, that marijuana is not as evil as it's been portrayed. That's basically all I want to say.
All right, Andy. Thanks for calling. Tom Riley, do you see other states moving in this direction of legalizing or not prosecuting those who are using marijuana for medical purposes?
Well, make no mistake, when Ethan's talking about working in these different states to have medical access to marijuana, their goal is to have full access to marijuana. We can talk about that a different time, but that's clearly part of the strategy. And I think that strategy is working very well in California right now. I think when other states look at what's happening in California, they probably don't want to have that. They don't want to have this chaotic, out-of-control situation with a total lack of clarity. And many municipalities there are trying to shut down these organizations piecemeal. I'm just concerned, as I said before, that the guidelines issued yesterday are going, and the way that they were covered and the way that it came out is going to create more confusion. They don't actually change the federal law. Even in the guidelines themselves, right here it says, nor does this guidance preclude investigation or prosecution even where there is clear and unambiguous compliance with existing state laws. So any states that do participate in this are still violating federal law. They didn't change the federal law. I don't think that it's cleared up any of that, but it sure has given people the impression that it has, too.
Carrie, do you think it's given the impression that that this is now clear?
Well, the Deputy Attorney General, David Ogden, who issued this memo the other day, indicated that the guidelines did not form a legal defense to anybody in federal court prosecuted for medical marijuana-related offenses. The federal government and the Justice Department were not legalizing marijuana in any way, and he walked a very fine line.
All right. Carrie Johnston of The Washington Post, Tom Riley, during the Bush administration, served in the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Ethan Nadelman of the Drug Policy Alliance. Thank you all so much. Have a great day, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.